Hello, everyone. Dave Burke here with an all-new Dave Burke podcast. Today, we're going to be talking high school and college football. We're going to be joined by guests on the high school side. We'll be joined by the founder of the Backyard Blitz, Eric Hortzman. Also, the man responsible for bringing Flying to the Hoop to the Dayton, Ohio area each year. And then we're going on the college side. We're going to talk the Purdue Boilermakers and the Kentucky Wildcats. Take a look at the Big Ten and the SEC. Be joined by Mike Carman of the Lafayette Journal and Courier, who's been covering the Boilermakers for a long time. And then we're going to be joined by Braxton Howard from BigBlueBanner.com, who covers the Kentucky Wildcats. So stay tuned for more after our message from our sponsor, First Star Logistics.
Dave Lapham here, and every day I am grateful for my experience to have played professional football. As a player, I realize self-motivation, leadership, and appreciating your teammates are key. At First Star Logistics, you can use those same attributes to create the life you want for you and your family. Build your future by working hard, like I did. You'll see results both on and off the field. Call First Star Logistics today and be part of our winning team.
All right, everybody, let's get started. We're going to talk high school football as we start this podcast. And recently, somebody had posted on Twitter that there's a possibility that the Greater Miami Conference could be the best public league of high school football in the state of Ohio. And I don't really want to get involved in looking at the whole state of Ohio because there's a lot of great football played in this state. But I wanted to look at three conferences in Southwest Ohio, going from Dayton down to Cincinnati, and kind of see where they really were at if we looked at the real numbers. And when I say real numbers, wins, losses, plain and simple. And so we're going to look at the Greater Miami Conference. We're going to look at the Eastern Cincinnati Conference. And we're going to look at the Greater Western Ohio Conference. Three conferences, there's some good teams in all three conferences, but who really has been playing the best football? And I wanted to go back 3 years, the past three seasons. So looking at the 2018, 2017, and 2016 seasons. And we're going to start real quick with a quick look at the Eastern Cincinnati Conference. And if you start looking at the teams that really stepped forward as far as winning, you have to look at Anderson. You would have to look at Kings. The last two seasons, you had to look at Milford. And then you have some question marks. So you get into Loveland has really struggled the past 2 years. In fact, the last 3 years, they've struggled. You get into Turpin's kind of been, you know, up and down. 2016, they went 11-1, but they went 6-4 and 4-6 the past two seasons. Walnut Hill's been right there, kind of in the middle, 4-6, 3-7, 4-6. And, you know, a program that I think you need to keep watching is West Claremont. This will be their third year as a school. So you have to look at 4-6 and 7-4. They had a really good first year. Nick Ayers, one of the top young coaches out there who I really like. And then Withrow has really struggled, and you think some changes there could really have a chance to get that program going in the right direction. We stopped by this spring, and they held hosted a combine there for the inner city kids of the city of Cincinnati, and they've got some talent. So interesting to see the job that gets done there. But when you look at overall as a conference, last three seasons, 123-131. So you can't really feel that, you know, that's the conference that's playing the best football, even though they have some teams playing some decent football. When you start looking at the Greater Miami Conference, you have to be excited by what you're seeing because there's, you know, Colerain has dominated that conference for years now. Tom Bolden has left. And while the Cardinals stayed in home to keep, you know, as far as their head coach, Bolden stayed within the conference going over the Lakota West. And you look at, you know, the big dog has been Colerain, 14-1, 11-3, 11-1. You can't, you know, those are great numbers by any high school program. But the team that's really been on the rise, another program, Mason, 8-3 and 9-3 the last 2 years. 7-5 in 2016. And you get some good football out of Fairfield. And then you look at Lakota East. They always have a potential. They went 8-4 a year ago. Sycamore, you know, last year didn't quite go their way at 6-4, but they went 9-3 in 2017. Oak Hills has always been kind of at the bottom. Lakota West is the team now with Tom Bolden everyone's really excited about. But the last 3 years, and you look at it, they had 8 wins total in the last 3 years. And you go, that program's had talent. Middletown, the Middies used to be one of the top programs people talked about when you talked Southwest Ohio football. And they have been struggling. You're looking at 3 wins over the last 3 seasons. Hamilton had struggled the last 3 years. And you look at the last 2 seasons, 4 wins for that program total. Princeton. Now, everyone's talking Princeton, and we talked in one of our previous podcasts about Princeton. Everybody is going to be watching Princeton because of all the talent, future college talent they have on that roster. But the last 2 seasons, remember, last season, 3-7, but they had 3 games where they had to forfeit. So, you know, if they would have had those wins, then you're looking at a whole different scenario as far as that record. The year before, they went 4-6 and then 6-4. So it'd be interesting to see what Princeton does this year in that record. But overall, as a conference, GMC's played some decent football, Colerain being in the state championship game a year ago. But overall, 162 and 164 as a conference. And that brings us to our last conference, the Greater Western Ohio Conference. And that conference is in a lot of change right now. So we looked at the teams that are in there right now for the 2019 season, knowing that going forward, 2 more teams will be leaving that conference in Lebanon and Trotwood-Madison. And we have to add, you know, when you start talking about the Eastern Cincinnati Conference, they're going to be adding teams themselves because they're going to be getting Lebanon. They're going to be getting a program in Witten Woods, who's been very successful the last few years. So that's going to help them become even a better program as far as an overall conference. So they're going to be adding some teams come 2020. But when you start looking at what's been done on the field the last 3 years, the Greater Western Ohio Conference, I feel, has been playing the best football. Overall as a conference, 199 and 131. And that's not to say every program has done great, because it hasn't. But you've got you know, your top programs, Huber Heights, Wayne, they've not really been their best the last 2 years. 2016, they went 11-1-1, but 7-4 the past 2 years. You look at Northmont, has kind of been a program on the rise. Last year, 10-2 and 8-3 the year before, after being 4-6 in 2016. Trotwood-Madison, a team that will be leaving the conference, has really done well. Last year, they struggled, 6-5. But 15-0 in 2017, state champions. 12-3 in 2016, really bumps up those numbers. And it's sad to see that Trotwood will be leaving the Greater Western Ohio Conference, because even though they're a smaller school, I feel that when it comes to football and even basketball, they have the talent. And you got to expect Centerville at some point to come back. 10-2 in 2017, but 2-8 last season. And Springfield, Maurice Douglas, Mo Douglas, head coach up there, 9-3 last season, 6-4, 7-4. So the last 3 years have been winning years, with last season being the best one in the last 3. And you have to expect that to keep going. And, you know, Miamisburg, what's going to happen at Miamisburg now that Lance Snyder is in charge? We feel that, you know, that program went 10-3 in 2016 and then struggled in 2017, came back 7-3 a year ago. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens going forward, because Lance Snyder was responsible for Northmont to really turning that corner. And they were a doormat program for many, many years until the Snyder family, Lance and his father Mike, went in and they really turned things around. So overall, our vote, if we had to vote on who's been playing the best football as far as public school leagues, it'd be the Greater Western Ohio Conference, who has gone 199 and 131 in the last 3 seasons. You're back on the Dave Burke Podcast. We're talking high school football, and what better event does kick off the 2019 football season than up in Huber Heights, Ohio, with the Backyard Blitz. And we're speaking with the founder, Eric Horstman, who is also known for his great work with Flying in the Hoop, who brings in some great teams in the winter to the Dayton area. But football, the last 6-7 years, you've really been going after and trying to build a nice compact event with some good matchups. And this year, a lot of interesting storylines, Eric.
Yeah, well, Dave, first of all, I've known you for quite a while. Thanks so much for having me on board. And yeah, this is actually going to be our fifth year of the Backyard Blitz. And like anything, you know, I always tell folks, if you build it, they will come. And, you know, a lot of people haven't heard of the Backyard Blitz, but they're very well aware of Flying to the Hoop. And in the early years of Flying to the Hoop, it took a little bit of traction. You keep building it, and then folks will eventually come. And that's what we're trying to do with the football equivalent. And this year is no different. We stayed in state this year. A little bit different with football than basketball, as you well know. It's a lot easier traveling 15 to 20 kids across the country than 80 to 100 that it is for football. But still looking to build upon it each year. This year we have a two-game slate at Wayne High School. And the first one, you know, kicking it right out of the gate, two traditional powerhouses, one from Cincinnati that's really a powerhouse across the country in Coleraine against traditional power Wayne High School. And that's quite a big Division I matchup. But like you said, started a little differently than we would have known in the past, because both schools are coming into this season with new head coaches.
Yeah, Tom Bolden headed off to Lakota West. Jay Mitten now coaching at the University of Dayton. And it's interesting to see. I don't expect a lot of, difference from what we've seen in the past. The fact that, one, Coleraine stayed in-house with their coaching hire, as did the Wayne Warriors by Roosevelt Mukes, who's a longtime assistant, former player as well. And when you look to do these matchups, Eric, my question is, how hard is it to put together, you know, especially a matchup like this, two teams that each year are fighting for playoff spots or, you know, state recognition, to go against each other in week one?
Right. It is difficult. People always ask me all the time, what's the difference between the basketball and the football? Really, it comes down to two things, the business and the school end of it. From the business perspective, like I mentioned earlier, it's a lot harder to travel a football team that's outside the state, even though that's what we have done, versus a basketball. So it's easier to get them in and out if that's what we need to do. But from the actual school perspective, with basketball, as you well know, everybody makes the playoffs. So they know when they're coming to Flying to the Hoop that, hey, this is a chance to showcase your kids. You may get a W, you may get an L, but at the end of the day, the experience is what matters, because you know it's a good start for your playoff run a month or two later. In football, it's challenging because every win counts and every loss hurts to a degree to get those playoff points to get yourself into the playoffs, because never everybody makes it. So that has been a challenge, because we have had some very heavy hitters that have wanted to play in it, but finding them an opponent. Case in point, a couple of years ago, we had IMG out of Florida ready to come up here and play in the event. It was just a little bit tricky on who we were going to try to get them to play, and it didn't pan out. So it's a lot different in the scheduling of the football, just because of the whole points structure, which I don't even understand. That's more difficult to do than my own tax returns. I'm sure you have it down like the back of your hand, but I know it's difficult.
No, it's always changing, especially when you start getting into teams that have to forfeit for different reasons. Eric, I want to ask this question. As you mentioned, the fact that two new head coaches, and that should add some excitement, because this will be the first time fans have a chance to really see these two teams and maybe what changes they will take.
Absolutely. Like I said, everybody's excited this time of year, even though they're not ready for their summer to end. Football season is right around the corner. So everybody usually is excited going into week one. But like you said, adding some extra flavor of having these two traditional powers, Dayton versus Cincinnati, two of the best teams in the state, and now with new head coaches, like we talked about earlier, both of them stayed in-house, but you still think that they're going to start putting their own fingerprint on the program, and boy, they're not going to have much of a time to breathe playing against each other in week one. This is not going to be a cakewalk for either side, as you well know.
And that game is Friday, August 30th, 7 p.m. at Wayne Heitkamp Stadium there in Huber Heights. You come back Saturday, August 31st, again at Wayne High School at Heitkamp Stadium, 7 o'clock kickoff. Columbus DeSales, and another program that's one of the top programs in the state, versus Dayton Carroll, a program that's had some struggles over the years, but at the same time, a change in coach.
Exactly. So out of the four teams that we have coming this year, three of them have head coaching changes. So Carroll is looking to start building a tradition here in the area. They haven't been terrible. They haven't been great. But now with the new head coach looking to build, you know, upon those past successes, DeSales was here last year, loved it, blew out Dunbar in their first-year head coach at that time, liked it enough that they wanted to come back again, like you mentioned, a smaller school but still a perennial powerhouse here in the Ohio area. Didn't their stud last year? I think he was a multi-sport stud, but didn't he end up signing with Michigan, or isn't he going to Michigan? Do you remember his name off the top of my head?
Not off the top of the head. Yeah, yeah, no, they've always had players. They every year they've had guys who, you know, are usually one or two guys that are top recruits.
Yeah, so we're looking at a private school matchup on day two of Catholic Powers, DeSales, and Carroll going at it once again at Wayne High School. And that's a little bit different that I know there's other showcases out there, but kind of like in true fashion with Flying to the Hoop, if we're going to make it an event, I don't want it spread out all over the place. I want to have it in one spot. I want to have eventually we're going to grow this into multiple games over the course, you know, of the day. But I want it in one place so that me and my staff aren't spread too thin going all over the place. We want to have one atmosphere where somebody can get a season ticket, so to speak, or a weekend ticket for the whole weekend, where our sponsors can settle in for some good family fun, interacting with the fans and what have you, and where we can bring showcase some of the economic impacts of these cities in the Dayton area that we want to hold the event at.
Yeah, and over the years, your Flying the Hoop event has done great things for the Dayton area economy.
People always say, you know, what are you most proud of on building with the Flying of the Hoop, that we're going into our 18th year this January? And it's really twofold. One is giving the chance for players to play on a national stage, that they get scholarship offers so that they can continue their education and playing careers in college. And second, you know, when the city of Dayton and it does an economic impact, and here in the middle of winter and a 3-day weekend in January, our little high school event has a $2 million economic impact on the area, doing our part to help the economy and doing our thing, showcasing the city of Dayton and putting it on the basketball map in January. So now that's what we're trying to do on the football stage.
Eric, one of the things that's impressed me about what you've done with this event, the Backyard Blitz, is a lot of people in the past have tried to build events, and they tried to build it so fast. We saw that with the Herb Street event, where they would bring in national teams from all across the country, but then they run into the issues with economics, like a lot of things in business. You have taken kind of the opposite approach, where you have stayed kind of small as you've slowly grown this event into one that's people are really starting to recognize.
That's exactly right. I appreciate the kind words, but I didn't want to bite off more than I can chew. Obviously, we learned from the mistakes from early on of Flying to the Hoop, and we built on that. And then going into the football, we tried to stay true with that. Like I mentioned earlier, if you build it, they will come. So we want to do it to where there's a solid foundation, not a shaky foundation. And as you know, at the end of the day, for the money that comes in, a lot of that goes out in expenses with trying to help the schools, help the teams, knowing that they have budget crunches, making sure that there's the ability for these schools to still make money on pre-sale tickets to help their athletic departments. All of those types of things, we want to build it on a solid foundation so that you and I are talking 10 years from now about this event on a much grander scale, because we've built it in the right way.
Again, we're talking to Eric Horstman, founder of the Backyard Blitz, also Flying to the Hoop. Eric, when you sit there, and one thing I can tell people, if they're looking to, you know, kick off their high school football, you know, season, this would be a great 2 days for them, because there will be talent, especially that Coleraine-Wayne game on that Friday night, with some kids, especially with Wayne. They have some very young players that people may not know about yet, But the thing I really want to talk to about is I know it takes more than just you. You have a staff, you have sponsors. Maybe talk about some of the people behind the scenes that have helped this event grow.
Yeah, like anything, you got to build a good team around you, as you well know. And even folks like yourself in the early years of not only this event, but Flying to the Hoop, the kind words put out there by media, you guys showing up to look at the talent. That is where the word of mouth grows, not only even with the teams that have been here in the past too, wanting to come back again, kind of like the Columbus DeSales. Pick Central was here for the first 2 years that we had it. As you all know, they got a great program in Jay Sherritt over there in Columbus, but also our staff here internally that also, as soon as we're done with this, turns around and starts working on Flying to the Hoop and our press conference there. And a good friend of mine, Ricky Schaefer, he helps me keep an eye out on the talent. I'm not on all the job boards or the Dave Burke scouting services or knowing everything out there that have to do with football. So I've got other eyes and ears out there that help me. And as always, you know, the sponsors help. They look at it as helping their community, being able to interact with their fan base, with their customer base. And we try to, you know, do the best we can for them, knowing that my goal is not to have a quick fix sponsor. My goal is to have a partner for the long term. And case in point, you know, 90% of our sponsors for Flying to the Hoop has been with us since the early years. And that's something, they're no longer sponsors, really. They're more like family. They really help us out when we have a bind and they feel it's a good bang for their buck. So all in all, we're trying to just translate the success of the basketball event over to the football side. And we think we're doing that. But like you said, in a slow, methodical way, that's going to be built to last.
Again, Friday, August 30th, 7 p.m. at Wayne High School. You have the Coleraine Cardinals against the Hebrides Wayne Warriors. Saturday, August 31st, 2019, 7 p.m., Wayne High School again. Columbus DeSales, Dayton Carroll. Eric, tell people how they can get tickets.
What we do is two ways. One, you can go to thebackyardblitz.com online. It's going to be $8 for Saturday night's game, $8 for Friday night's game, or we're making it a steal. It's $10, and you can come to both games. Or you can come. We're going to have the gates open at about 5:30 on Friday and 5:30 on Saturday, and we'll have plenty of tickets there for walk-up to enjoy the games and the atmosphere that those evenings.
Eric, we wish you the best of luck this year. We look forward to trying to get out there to see both these games, as they should be very exciting. Again, Eric Horstman of the Backyard Blitz, we thank you for being on the Dave Burke Podcast.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
We're back on the Dave Burke Podcast, and we're looking at college football now, shifting gears a little bit. We're going to talk about two teams in the college ranks, the Purdue Boilermakers, the Kentucky Wildcats. First off, Purdue head coach Jeff Brohm last season, 6-7, huge win over Ohio State on national television. And then I felt their biggest loss was Wisconsin in three overtimes. And you look at that loss, and it was late season, and to lose in three overtimes, you kind of see that, you know, there were some areas there where maybe they get that win, it changes maybe the outlooks, where they end up in the Music City Bowl with, they got blown out by Auburn. But I felt that Wisconsin game was a big loss. We're going to find out more about them from Mike Carmen when we talk to him, who covers Purdue on a daily basis. This year, you look at their biggest road game, being again against the Wisconsin Badgers in November, late November. A home game, they get Nebraska at home November 2nd. It's going to be interesting to see how the Cornhuskers come in with all the changes in year two of the Scott Frost era. So Purdue, you know, really stepped up their game when you look at the program overall. They really stepped up, keeping Jeff Brohm from bolting for Louisville, giving him a 7-year, $36.8 million contract. He's shown that, you know, one, he can win, and you don't count his teams out, especially when they're clicking on offense. And you can ask the Buckeyes about that. The Buckeyes learn pretty quick that they can score some points when everything is working right. However, for this program to get a total turnaround, it's still a work in progress. And after, you know, a major decline when Joe Tiller left after the 2008 season. Yeah, we're talking about 2008. And you look at, you know, prior to Jeff Brohm arrival, the Boilermakers had gone 31-67. And already Brown has them playing 500 football, but, you know, I don't know if they're quite there yet to fight for the Big Ten Western Division title. And but they've got one of the most exciting players in all college football and Rondell Moore on offense. Interesting to see what we get from Mike Carmen as far as what other players or areas on offense they should be, you know, good at or maybe have some struggles with. Defense, one of my all-time favorite young men to deal with, Marcus Bailey out of Columbus, Ohio. He's going to be one of the senior key leaders on the team and who had a huge game against the Buckeyes last year and will look to finish his college career on a high note. Again, last season, the Boilermakers, you know, one more game Big Ten play than the previous season, but that loss in the Music City Bowl, I'm sure, left a little bit of a bad taste. So we'll be talking again with Mike Carmen of the Lafayette Journal and Courier, who covers the Purdue Boilermakers on a full-time basis. And then we're also going to be talking Kentucky Wildcat football. And it's interesting to see how the Wildcats come back, because they have lost a lot of talent. And when, you know, you talk talent, they lost a lot of talent. And we're going to be joined by Braxton Howard of Big Blue Banner, who covers the team on a daily basis. And you look at last season, a 10-3 record. They finished tied for second in the SEC East. You look at some of the games that they won. They beat Florida on the road. They had Mississippi State they won. They beat South Carolina. They beat Middle Tennessee. But they had some losses that you go, you know, they should have, you know, they lose to Tennessee at Tennessee. And everyone, I think, no one expected them to beat Georgia. They lost that game 17-34. And, you know, you look ahead this year's schedule, and you see that they're going to open up with Toledo. They get Eastern Michigan. And then they go right into SEC play with Florida at home. And then they're on the road, Mississippi State and South Carolina, before coming back with Arkansas. And then at Georgia. And then Missouri, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, UT Martin, kind of a breather there. And then they finish with the in-state rivalry game against Louisville. So kind of a unique schedule. And again, like I said, we'll be talking to Braxton Howard from Big Blue Banner about the Wildcats. So stay tuned as we go to those interviews right now. Joining us on the Dave Burke Podcast, Mike Carmen. Mike, I'm so excited to have you talking about the Purdue Boilermakers. And it's a lot of excitement over there with head coach Jeff Brohm and what the Boilermakers have done since he's taken over the program.
Well, it's 2 years for Jeff. He's 13-13, but he's had suitors after each of his first 2 years. You know, Purdue thought, you know, maybe last year with Louisville open, his hometown, his alma mater, there was a moment or two where they thought they might lose him. But, you know, Purdue stepped up financially, reworked his contract a little bit. And I think at the end of the day, Jeff knew that the best football situation for him was staying at Purdue. Louisville's a bit of a mess right now, and I'm sure at some point they'll get figured out. But Jeff is starting to build something here at Purdue, and you know he's recruiting well. His 2019 class was ranked in the top 25. His 2020 class is in the top 30 right now. So he's getting more talented here, which they needed, and it's still a bit of a long process. But yeah, there's excitement here, and they're eager to get this season going and see what comes out of it.
Mike, before we talked, I did kind of my own little preview and looking back, and you can agree or disagree and tell me your thoughts. I had last season their biggest win being that Ohio State game, and you know people took notice all of a sudden that Brohm knows how to coach and kids believe in him. And, but I also had the biggest loss being the Wisconsin game in that 3 overtime game. You know, do you agree with that?
Well, the big win, definitely the one over Ohio State, was on a national stage. You had the buildup of the Tyler Trent story, the student who has been battling bone cancer, and, the team adopted him over the last couple years and, unfortunately, passed away on January 1st of this year. So you had all that wrapped into one day at Ross-Ade Stadium, and it was a perfect day from Purdue's standpoint of everything coming together. I'm not sure. I don't believe I've ever seen a day like that, and I probably will not see another day like that in covering any sporting event or sports in general. That day should be etched in the minds of people. You know, Purdue fans, non-Purdue fans, now maybe Ohio State fans won't etch it in their mind. But, I mean, from a Purdue standpoint, that was the perfect day. You know, the worst loss, you know, the Wisconsin loss was more of a gut-wrenching loss because Purdue did have a lead, and they had a chance to put that game away and couldn't do it. And it did come back to bite them as far as maybe staying in the Big Ten West conversation a little bit longer. But I thought the loss at Minnesota, where they just got crushed, was kind of demoralizing for them because you didn't see it coming, and they just got run out of the stadium. Minnesota had changed its defensive coordinators right after giving up 55 points to a woeful Illinois team, and Minnesota came and took it to them, and Purdue didn't have an answer. And it's one of the few times in Jeff's brief tenure here where, you know, Purdue really didn't fight back. And that ended up being a really bad loss. You know, they recovered, eventually went to a bowl game, and then got blown out against Auburn in the Music City Bowl. But I rank Minnesota probably as the worst loss for them last year. You know, and each loss has its own meaning, and the Wisconsin loss had a lot of significance to it. But I kind of label the Minnesota game kind of in the category you're talking about.
You talked about the administration stepping up and keeping Brohm in West Lafayette, but they've been doing things behind the scenes with improvements over the last couple years. And while I give them credit, the fact that, I mean, they really stepped up when you look at, they added, you know, a 7-year contract, $36.8 million, I believe, for Coach Brohm. But they've done some other things to really improve, because I was over for a game a couple years ago covered that you just sit there and you scratch your head what was happening overall with facilities and so forth, which is very important in today's world. And you talked about recruiting, but they've really kind of answered a lot of those issues when it comes to the behind the scenes stuff.
They have. They've invested. They've invested in a performance complex, which is their weight room, their locker room, their office space. You know, all the bells and whistles that players like to see when they come on a visit. You know, to be honest, every program has that, and you've got to do that. Purdue was late to the game in that area, and they're making some improvements to the stadium right now, but the football performance complex was probably the biggest investment that they made in the last 5 to 6 years, where, you know, the players like to see their home. They like to see where they're going to be hanging out, because players spend the majority of their time in that facility. Yes, they go home. Yes, they do some other things, but a majority of their life in college is spent in that facility, either in the locker room, in the training room, in the meeting room, in the game room, you know, whatever bells and whistles that they're putting out there. And then they've also invested in the coaching part of it, with not only Jeff, but, you know, assistant coaches being able to retain them. And that's been a shift in the university. It's been a shift from the president and the board. You know, when they hired the new athletic director, Mike Bobinski, three years ago or so, his mission and his priority was football 1, 2, and 3. But in order to do that, he had to have the resources behind him to go out and find a Jeff Brohm and go out and show that commitment that they were serious about football. And it pays dividends, as you know, and most people know. It pays dividends not just for football program and the athletic department, but it pays dividends for the university in a lot of different areas, where people feel good about your university. They're more willing to give, so you have other projects you can get going and get off the ground. But yeah, there's been a there's been a shift around campus with a commitment to football, and there's always people that scoff at it a little bit, but as I said, the benefits of having a visible football program, a successful football program, really trickles down to everybody on campus and really beyond.
Let's talk about some players. Last season, I had a chance to come over and watch Purdue play Northwestern in their season opener. And people I was sitting with, I told them, I said, you have to watch out for Rondale Moore. He's special. And people just looked at me and said, he's a freshman. He's this, you know, he's not that big, you know, all those things. And he went on and he showed in that game glimpses of what was to come. Talk about him as a player and what he brought to the offense last year and what's expected out of him in year two.
Well, as a player, he's just so dynamic. He's a player that, you know, Purdue hasn't had in a while. Now, you can go back to Joe Tiller era and look at a Taylor Stubblefield and some other receivers that they've had. But Rondale Moore kind of surpasses all those people. I mean, he's electrifying. He's fast. He's quick. He's got great hands. But I think the thing that probably separates him from a lot of other players is just his strength, his lower body strength. He squatted 600 pounds, as a freshman. You know, and this is a kid that when he did it weighed 175. So he's just extremely strong, and the work that this kid puts in is second to none. And I know a lot of players work hard and they put in the time and they do. But Rondale last year, he loves to play the game. That he would do more reps than what they wanted him to do. And finally, they were able to track him and figure out that he was doing more than he should be. And it's like unnecessarily driving your car and wearing down your tires when you don't need to. And so they had to put him on a bit of a pitch count. They had to give him some days off just to rest him to make sure that he didn't jump in the third string line to get more reps, because that's what he wanted to do. And he's been smarter about his work this summer, where not every rep has to be, you know, where he runs a 16 yard out and they throw it to him. He takes reps off the jugs machine. He does a little thing, finger stretches, and just things that will help him get better without, you know, doing all the football stuff that you do. So you do save his legs a little bit. You do try to keep him as fresh as possible. But, you know, as far as this year, he should have more weapons around him, which will force defenses to make some choices. You know, last year he was the guy, so he got double teamed or he got put in a box out there. He still had a great year. But, you know, with Milton Wright, who's from Louisville, freshman receiver, David Bell, receiver from Indianapolis, if, you know, these guys come in and make an impact, that's going to help Rondale make some more big plays. And, you know, Purdue has a chance to have an explosive offense if, you know, the offensive line holds up. And that's a key area that really has to come together. But, you know, I expect a big year out of Rondale, in part because they will get him the ball. They're going to run plays for him, but also they have some other people around him that's going to force some defenses to play this offense probably a little bit more honestly than they want to.
You mentioned those big time recruits. How much did it help his success on the field, do you feel, in bringing in that talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball?
I think he's been a magnet to recruits, to say, this is what Rondale did in his first year, so you can come do the same thing. Now, you can only sell early playing time for so long, because all those kids are coming in and playing. And they stick here for 3 or 4 years. But I think his initial season last year kind of helped put Purdue on the map. It probably helped Jeff Brohm get in some more homes that maybe he would not have gotten in. And, you know, the fact that, you know, Rondale meshes with Jeff's offensive philosophy as far as pushing the ball down the field in the passing game, you know, also helps. So, yeah, it's nothing but a benefit. You know, Purdue still has a long way to go in its program, but they've, you know, I think they're starting out with Jeff, you know, in a really positive way as far as recruiting goes and getting some top level talent in here to try to duplicate what maybe Rondell did last year.
You mentioned offensive line. Is that the biggest question mark on offense for this season?
Yes. Yeah, they're going to have three new starters. Just a matter of where those starters, you know, where the holes are. Now, right now, or at least when camp started, you looked at the three interior positions, center and two guards. Now they've shifted a little bit where they've moved one of their tackles in the guard, experienced guy, Matt McCann. And now you have probably a redshirt freshman at right tackle. So you're not going to you probably won't see all the inexperienced guys together. They'll be broken up a little bit. But the fact that they have three new starters, they were not able to add a graduate transfer in the off season, which is something that Purdue's going to have to start doing probably every year until they can get some sort of offensive line pipeline started, which I don't know if they can or not. Because that's really not been Purdue's history over the years. But how that group holds up is the key. I mean, they had a scrimmage last Saturday, close scrimmage, we were not able to watch. But Jeff was not happy with the performance of the offensive line, and he usually doesn't say stuff like that unless there's a lot of truth to it. He's not, you know, yes, he tries to motivate his kids and stuff like that, but, you know, when he says a group didn't perform well, then they didn't perform well. Now the curious thing is coming up this Saturday, they have another closed scrimmage and what will be his tone after that. But they've got to get good play out of the offensive line. It doesn't have to be the best in the Big Ten, but it can't be the worst. So they've got to find a way to get in the middle of the league as far as offensive line play, or at least be knocking on the door of middle of the league, because they do have the weapons. And I think they have the quarterback with the arm, but as everyone knows, it's about what happens up front, and you got to be able to run the ball a little bit too. And they'll scheme around it. They'll come up with some creative ways to run the ball than the traditional, just handing it off. And they'll do some different things. But I just don't know if you can do that for 12 games without teams really catching up to you and figuring out what you're doing. So yes, Purdue's offensive line has been and will remain the question mark until we actually see it in a game. That first one's August 30th at Nevada.
We're looking at the Purdue Boilermakers here on the Dave Burke Podcast. Joining us, Mike Carman of the Lafayette Journal and Courier, who's covered the Boilermakers full-time for many years. I don't want to age you, Mike, but I know it's been quite a while.
It's been over a decade.
Mike, I want to continue. One of my all-time favorite players from covering recruiting at the high school level as a young man who's at Purdue, Marcus Bailey, be a senior linebacker. I'm feeling old now thinking that he's even a senior, because I still remember talking to him in high school. And you talked about that Ohio State game, and that young man enjoyed, you know, probably things he'll never forget. As you said, you'll never forget, but you take a guy like him, had a big game against the Buckeyes, being from Columbus. He's kind of like the anchor of that defense, it seems like, emotionally, as well as what he does as far as play on the field.
Yeah, he's a productive player at linebacker. And, you know, I chuckle about the Ohio State game last year because, you know, going into the game, of course, everybody here locally wanted to talk to Marcus about being from Columbus and not going to Ohio State and not, you know, being seriously recruited by them and all that. He completely downplayed it and didn't, he wasn't going to say anything that would have ignited whatever. And he completely downplayed it and all that. But then after the game, I remember he's in the media room and he goes, "Hey, this was a big game for me, in case you didn't know." Like, yes, we figured that out, Marcus. So it was a nice way for him to end it. It was a nice way for him to put the seal on it with the pick six. But yeah, he's blossomed into just a really, really solid Big Ten player. And he's going to have a little bit more help. You know, they got a grad transfer, Ben Holt, who's from Western Kentucky, that's going to play the middle. That's going to allow Marcus to do some other things. But he's clearly the leader leader of that defense, and I really expect a big year out of him.
What is, outside of linebacker, what's the strength of this defense overall? Is it the front, or is it that linebacker crew?
Well, I think the linebacker crew is the strength, and it depends what they put out there. They'll play a lot of nickel this year, depending on the opponent. So you're going to have two linebackers out there. If they get a third linebacker out there, it's probably either Jalen Alexander or Cornell Jones. Those guys have experience, but they're not up to the level of Ben Holt or Marcus Bailey. Linebackers are strength. I think the secondary will be a strength by the time the season gets going. They have a lot of big bodies back there. They're more athletic. They have improved length, especially at the corner position. When you put a guy like Simeon Smiley out there, he's been playing more nickel at camp than cornerback, but he's just a big body that you have to have back there. And they've got some safeties, Jalen Graham, who's a freshman from Detroit who came in the spring, that will play this year. And then Corey Trice is a 6'3" kid from Kentucky area who definitely looks the part. He'll see time as well. The question is, can they get a pass rush and get in the backfield and make some plays? Right now, that Lorenzo Neal, their top defensive tackle, hasn't practiced yet. I wouldn't expect him to play in the opener at Nevada. So that leaves a big void, in my opinion. Now they have more bodies this year to choose from. They've got more experience up front. But when you take a guy like Lorenzo Neal off the field, that's a hole for this defense. So I'm curious how they will try to make up for that. They have freshman George Karloftis, who's going to play one of the defensive end spots. He's been with the first team since spring practice, and he's a guy I think will have an impact on this season. And he'll need to have a big impact without Lorenzo out there. He's a guy that he's raw athletically. He still has a lot to learn from a football standpoint, but he seems to have a knack how to get in the backfield and get to the quarterback. And if he can produce some tackles for loss and put some pressure on the quarterback, then Purdue's going to be a much improved defense. And I think they will overall. I would expect this defense to return closer to the level they played at in 2017 as opposed to last year.
Mike, in looking at the schedule, it doesn't seem on paper to have the tough areas like it did a year ago when you look at the Ohio States, the Michigan States on the schedule. But it's still not an easy schedule when you sit there and look at, they open on the road at Nevada, Vanderbilt at home, TCU, always a tough team to play, and then you get into that Big Ten play. How do you see this team and that schedule playing out when we sit here and we start talking about things come beginning of December?
Well, it's a difficult question for me to answer because, I need to see the offensive line perform in a game. And once I see that, I'll have a better idea of what they might be able to do. But if they can go out to Nevada, win that game, and not have issues on the offensive line, then that probably bodes well for them to get back to a bowl game and maybe go past the 6-win mark, maybe 7. But if they're going to struggle on the offensive line against Nevada, then you're going to struggle on the offensive line against Vanderbilt, and you're definitely going to struggle on the offensive line against TCU. So that's the biggest concern. And then, as you said, you're in the Big Ten play with Minnesota. They play three West teams on the road who are usually contenders. That's Iowa, that's Wisconsin, and Northwestern. So they're going to have to go on the road and win some important games late in the year. And again, if that offensive line holds up, I think they'll be in a good position because I think they have the talent on offense to put up some points. But if they're struggling on the offensive line, this team may struggle to reach a bowl game. That's just how important it is right now. Then they have to stay healthy, as most teams do. Purdue is not blessed with a lot of depth right now. And the other part of it is too, they're probably going to end up playing several freshmen, guys that haven't played yet. So you're going to have some up and down games. You're going to have inconsistencies, and it's just a matter of how much they can weather that. Now, their better players, a lot of their better players are freshmen, and they they'll earn the right to be on the field. But, you know, playing freshman in the Big Ten at this level is really a difficult task. And that'll be something to watch this year, just how well those freshmen adapt and adjust and what kind of impact they can have.
Mike, outside of Rondell Moore, who's the one player this team cannot be without?
I would say Marcus Bailey on the defensive side. If you're going overall, I would say Marcus Bailey would be a guy that they can't afford to lose. You know, offensively, it's probably other than Rondell, it's probably anybody on that offensive line that has any experience. Or as they get into the season, starts gaining experience, and then you lose your center or you lose one of your guards that you've been playing with the last three or four games. So they're in a very difficult position as far as trying to keep their guys healthy. And I think the coaching staff does a good job of making sure that guys, you know, the most important thing for them right now is just getting their main guys to the first game and then go from there. And I think they will. But, you know, Marcus would be number one, and then probably somebody on the offensive line, number two.
When you sit there and you start looking at rankings, team rankings and so forth, preseason, do you feel right now, a lot of places I've seen anywhere from 50-ish in the country, do you feel this team is being, you know, underlooked or overlooked?
I think that people view Purdue without really digging a little bit deeper on them. Yes, they have Rondell Moore. They have Milton Wright, Elijah Sindelar's back at quarterback. I think they get oversold a little bit. I don't know if a lot of people really look at the issues, the potential issues on the offensive line. Or maybe they have, and they don't think it'll be a problem. You know, when people start talking about who can win the West and that, you know, one of six teams could win the West, yes, Purdue potentially could win the West this year. I don't think that they're ready to win the West yet because they do have question marks on the offensive line and you're playing a lot of freshmen. I do think they have a chance to stay in the West conversation a little bit longer than they did last year. But, you know, I don't, you know, hopefully you understand what I'm saying. I think Purdue gets oversold just a little bit because of Jeff Brohm and his coaching ability, which, you know, it's top notch. But, you know, if this team doesn't make a bowl game, it won't be that surprising to me based on some of the deficiencies that I think that we've talked about over the last few minutes. But if those things come together, this could be a 7 or 8 win team.
That's why we came to you, Mike Carman of the Lafayette Journal and Courier. I want people who understand the fact that guys like you, Mike, who every day out there grinding, covering a team. People think it's fun, it's easy. It's not. And you've had the lows of watching this team, but now you get to enjoy some of it. And it, believe it or not, you know, when you cover a team, it's a lot better to cover them when they're having some success.
Well, you know, they're interesting people to write about, win or lose. Just the fact that Jeff and his coaching staff have brought in more talent, more guys that are ready to play and look the part, is interesting in its own right. And, you know, we're in this business to find stories, and there's plenty of stories out there. But yeah, this is an intriguing year. This is a year you probably want to be covering the team because it can go several different directions based on who plays well and who stays healthy and stuff like that. Those are the years where you don't know. Yes, I've been through the years where you knew what was going to happen, and you knew that Purdue would be eliminated by a bowl game probably in late October. But now there's interest. The fan base is back, and they're interested. You know, there's a different, you know, buzz about Purdue football around here and across the state that hasn't happened in a long time.
For full-time coverage of the Purdue Boilermakers, make sure to follow Mike Carman of the Lafayette Journal and Courier. And Mike, we thank you for being on the Dave Burke podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Burke.
We continue talking college football here on the Dave Burke Podcast. Going to talk SEC football and the Kentucky Wildcats. Joining us, Braxton Howard of BigBlueBanner.com. And Braxton, kind of an interesting year for Mark Stoops after the success they had a year ago.
Definitely is. You know, they lose clearly a lot of firepower, a lot of guys that helped change the program, and Josh Allen and Benny Snell. But, you know, I mean, I definitely think it'll be interesting to watch it pan out. And it's definitely going to be a totally new look Kentucky team, especially from, you know, what I've been hearing. You know, it's just anytime you lose two guys like that, it's definitely going to change the outlook of your team. But I definitely think that, you know, Stoops and the coaching staff have a lot to prove this season.
You mentioned Benny Snell. What a big part of the Kentucky offense he had been. And losing him, and you sit there and you look at, you know, who's going to be the guy that steps forward and replaces that production?
Yeah, you know, I think it'll be just completely a totally different offense this year. And, you know, I think that might help benefit Terry Wilson more, especially, you know, I think it's hard for a dual threat guy to, you know, really catch a rhythm or get into a rhythm as a quarterback, like, you know, Wilson is, especially if you have a guy like Snell, who is great, but, you know, when he's running the ball, the offense runs through him. And I think, which is no knock on the coaching staff, it would have been, you know, ridiculous if they did it any other way, because, you know, they saw what Benny Snell could do, and he clearly won Kentucky a lot of games. But, you know, and I think that was critical in getting Wilson ready for this year, you know, because last year he clearly wasn't relied upon to, you know, keep Kentucky's offense going. It was definitely Snell, you know, the offense was running through him. So I think this year, you know, it's going to run through Terry Wilson. And I think it's going to be a lot different. And I think Wilson is ready to take that next step. And I think as far as, you know, the star production that Benny Snell had, I think most of that will probably go to wide receiver Lynn Bowden. But you know, I think Kentucky has a lot of different weapons and some new names that will step up, definitely.
You mentioned Lynn Bowden, a very dynamic player from the state of Ohio when he was in high school, and he's kind of carried that over. Hard to believe he's already going to be a junior.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you know, you think about all the hype that was, you know, surrounding him, you know, coming in to Kentucky. I think, you know, his freshman year was definitely, you know, a learning year, him transitioning from quarterback to receiver. And last year, you really saw him step into that role of, you know, being the number one target outside for the offense. And I think this year it just seems like it's ready for him to, you know, really step into that star role and probably, you know, elevate the whole group along with him. So
you mentioned you feel this offense will be a little bit different. Eddie Grand, who I had the chance to get to know when he's at the University of Cincinnati, loves to run the football, but he seems to be able to adapt. And you mentioned Lynn Bowden. Talk about the importance, maybe from a guy that doesn't get a lot of press when you look at tight ends, a guy like a Justin Rigg, another Ohio kid who seems to be coming into his own.
Definitely. And I mean, you know, I think one of the most consistent spots of Kentucky over these past years of the Mark Stoops era has been that tight end spot. You know, I mean, they had Greg Hart, and then of course Conrad, you know, held it down for as long as he did. And, you know, I think Justin Riggs ready to, you know, step up and be the type of guy that CJ Conrad was. But also outside of him, you know, you have some guys that can offer you different things. I mean, I think Keaton Upshaw, I think he's a guy that definitely is going to be able to, you know, make a big threat in the receiving game. And then, You also got a guy like Brennan Bates who can also come in and do some damage. So I just think that they have a, you know, Brig definitely leading that position, but they got a lot of different things to like there at the tight end spot.
What concerns do you have when you start looking at the offensive line? They've got, you know, Drake Jackson's been concrete there at the center position, but you know, you're looking at basically only, you know, one other senior. What concerns do you have when you look at the offensive line play?
I think really just maintaining, you know, health is probably the biggest thing for the offensive line. You know, last year they lost Landon Young. They get him back this year at the left tackle spot. I think that side is solidified, you know, with Logan Stenberg at the guard, and then you got, of course, Drake Jackson at center, and then Landon Young. So I really think the other side, which will be Darian Kennard and Luke Fortner, and then Mason Wolf will also be rotating in that guard position. You know, I think Coach Schlarman is John Schlarman is definitely one of the most like good at developing offensive line talent, and I think every year, despite, you know, losing Cole Mosier and losing Landon Young, he's always, you know, patched it up to make it not look as bad as it seems. I definitely think Darian Kennard takes the next step, but I think out of, you know, probably all of the position groups, offensive line's been arguably the most consistent over, you know, the past 3-4 years for Kentucky. So I definitely think that, you know, it will be tough to, you know, overcome the loss of, you know, Bunchy Stallings and Georgia Tofo J, but I do think that they have a solid six guys that they can really build around. So I think maintaining the health there is definitely going to be critical for that position.
Let's jump over to the defensive side. Again, we can talk about losses. You lose a guy like a Darius West and a Mike Edwards. Talk about, you know, where you feel the strengths are and the weaknesses on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, it sounds crazy to say, but, you know, after you lose a guy like Josh Allen, it definitely looks like the defense is not going to be as good, you know, especially losing all the secondary. But I definitely think the biggest strength is the front seven. I mean, I think, you know, returning Calvin Taylor, TJ Carter, Quentin Bohanna, returning those guys on the defensive line, I think that's big. And then you also got Marquand McCall, who had a, you know, great freshman season. And then, you know, you got a couple other guys that can rotate in. And then, of course, I think the inside linebackers are just absolutely an amazing group with, you know, Cash Daniel and DeAndre Square. And then behind them, you got Chris Oates and Jamin Davis. And, you know, I think Boogie Watson, I'm sure he learned a lot from Josh Allen. And I think he might be ready to, you know, step into that role. I mean, I know Josh Allen had 7 sacks, and then under Brad White, of course, he went to 17 sacks last season. So, you know, I think that they'll find that good rotation within the front seven. I definitely think that that's a strong point. And then the secondary, you know, there's a lot of question marks. I mean, you got Jordan Griffin, who is now, you know, he's really the only veteran of that group. And I think, you know, his role is going to be much increased, especially after the loss of Devontae Robinson, which was, you know, really big, unfortunate loss for the defense. So I think the safeties, you know, they're going to have to really all across the board outside of Jordan Griffin, you're going to see a lot of names that, you know, haven't been out there playing yet. And I think really the secondary will be a work in progress, but the bottom line is, you know, if you have a good front seven, it can definitely cover up some of those holes in the secondary. But, you know, if you're good up front on both sides of the football, you're definitely going to see some success. It's been a formula that's, you know, been proven over years. So I definitely think, you know, the defense is going to look a lot different, and it's going to be a work in progress on the back end more than likely throughout the season.
We're talking Kentucky Wildcats here on the Dave Burke Podcast. Joining us, Braxton Howard of BigBlueBanner.com. You've been watching this Wildcat football program for a long time, Braxton. Mark Stoops seems to be the right guy to take this program and continue building upon it. Been doing extremely well recruiting, results on the field, 10 wins a year ago. Do you feel with the loss of the talent that they had from a year ago, can they get 10 or more wins this year, or do you see a small step back?
You know, I definitely believe that they can get back to 10 wins. Just looking at the schedule, you know, I think there's a lot of teams and on the schedule that, you know, they lose a lot too. Specifically, you know, the SEC West foe for Kentucky, Mississippi State. I mean, you know, they lost a lot too specifically, but there's a lot of other teams. I definitely think that they could get back to 10 wins. I think that it's by no coincidence that, you know, Mark Stoops and Kentucky over the past 6 years are the only team to, you know, improve their record or not take a step back. And I think when you look at the schedule, I mean, I think the only loss that you can really almost pencil in permanent is at Athens, you know, going down to Georgia. I think that's definitely going to be a tough one for Kentucky to win. But, I mean, you get Florida, Missouri, and Tennessee at home. I think all those are winnable games. So, you know, it'll definitely be interesting, and it'll be – totally different team than last season, but I do think that they could get back to 10 wins.
When you look at, first off, the offensive side of the ball, who's the one player this offense cannot be without?
I would probably say Lynn Bowden, definitely, because, you know, I think Kerry Wilson, he's going to have a great year, but I also think that, you know, Sawyer Smith is a guy that, you know, could come in and, you know, it would definitely be a different dynamic with Sawyer Smith in, but I think that, you know, he's definitely good enough to come in and provide a good quarterback, you know, for the receivers. But I think Bowden is definitely that one guy that kind of sets the offense apart. I think that he's going to be, you know, that explosive guy that is really the difference maker when you're playing Kentucky in 2019. So I definitely think, you know, him or probably Drake Jackson would also be a good candidate, because, you know, I think the center position, you know, if anything ever happens to that position, you know, I think pretty much every team has a struggle of overcoming something like that. But I definitely think Lynn Bowden is, you know, is what going to make Kentucky's offense special in 2019.
And when you look over the defensive side of the ball, who do you see as that one player that the Wildcats cannot do without?
I think the defense is definitely a little bit tougher. I would probably honestly go with, I would say Jordan Griffin, because at this point he's the only veteran left in the secondary. And, you know, without him, already losing Devontae Robinson was a huge hit. But, you know, Jordan Griffin, he's going to be the only one really with, you know, that in-game, that true experience, which I know Tyrell Asian had some flashes last year, got his feet wet. But I definitely think, you know, without Jordan Griffin, the secondary is just going to be a lot of inexperience, a lot of young guys that would have to step up. So I definitely think he, you know, even losing guys like somebody in the front seven like Cash, you know, there's good depth in the front seven and the secondary. That's clearly not the case. So I think it's very vital to have Jordan Griffin's leadership on the back end in that group and have his experience back there as well.
Again, we've been talking with Braxton Howard of BigBlueBanner.com, who covers the Kentucky Wildcats. And Braxton, the kind of close, we kind of talked about it. You feel this team can get to another 10-win season or even better. When you have success, assistant coaches start getting other opportunities. Guys like an Eddie Grant or a Darren Henshaw, or even a Brad White. What concerns should Wildcat fans have if another successful season about this staff who's really put things together, taking a couple of hits by losing coaches to other jobs as maybe head coaches?
Definitely. I mean, that's always a concern, you can have whenever you're headed in the right direction and you keep winning football games. But I think Mark Stoops, I think he does a great job at, building, he's done a great job at building a culture there. And I think a lot of his staff wants to be around him. And, definitely if it's an assistant coach, being offered a head coaching job, I mean, that's tough. And it's something that, coaching staffs have to deal with. But I think Mark Stoops has done an incredible job at, keeping the continuity within the staff and really building that foundation. And I think that's ultimately why he went with Brad White, when Matt House left and went to Kansas City. I think that, of course, Brad White's a young guy. I think he's going to do really well as defensive coordinator. But, I think that's something that, they'll probably could deal with in the near future. But I do think Stoops has a great staff together, and it's almost to the point where, he's finally built that staff that he wants. And I think continuity is such a big thing to him. So I definitely think that he's the type of guy that could overcome that. I mean, he's already, had to deal with some different offensive coordinators and stuff and losing some guys like that. So I think, only time will tell, see how that goes.
And Braxton, to close, you feel that, over the past there had been talk about Mark Stoops being, interested in other jobs out there. Do you feel the fact that, one, you see the university as a whole, really stepping up their game when it comes to facilities, and you see the backing of the fans, do you feel it comes to a point now to where, Stoops looks to continue to stay here long term, or do you feel that there's a job out there that if it came calling, he would listen to?
Honestly, I feel like the way he's built Kentucky to this point and how much he's done, I think there's definitely just a opportunity there for him to keep improving and keep growing the program. And, I think at the SEC level, I think that, he could build something, huge and something that's never been done before at Kentucky. And, I think the SEC is the best conference in college football. Other than that, unless, he were to want to go back to one of his older coaching jobs, but I don't know. I think when he really, looks back and looks at what he's built in the SEC, I think it'd be hard to, kind of pry him away from that position. And I think Kentucky's just got, I think they've got a lot of good leadership right now. Not just Mark Stoops, but, Coach Calipari, Mitch Barnhart. I think the whole university has a great thing in place. And I think Stoops, for the most part, I would feel confident saying that he's going to be at Kentucky for quite a while.
The Kentucky Wildcats open the season August 31st against Toledo at Kroger Field. Braxton Howard from Big Blue Banner, we appreciate you taking the time and telling us more about this year's Kentucky Wildcats.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Episode 3 of the Dave Burke Podcast is a wrap. We want to thank our guest, Eric Hortzman of the Backyard Blitz, Mike Carmen of the Lafayette Journal and Courier, and Braxton Howard of BigBlueBanner.com, giving us more in-depth information about the Backyard Blitz event, also the Purdue Boilermakers and the Kentucky Wildcats. Remember, you can be part of the podcast. You can leave us a message. It's only about a minute long. You can leave a voice message. Just look after the description for a tab you can click, and you can leave a short voice message. And if we like it, we may even use it in one of our podcasts. Also, if you like this podcast and you want to help support it, you can also tap on the support this podcast and become a monthly donation supporter of the Dave Burke Podcast. Until next time, this is Dave Burke.